The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 279.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're well. Welcome to this weekend's live stream, public live stream on the George Gammon channel. I want to encourage you all to check out rebelcapitalistlive.com. That is the live event, face-to-face live, not over Zoom, that I'm doing in Dallas, January 7th through the 9th. And I'm really excited because, as you can imagine, we're going to be talking about building wealth and thriving in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. But especially because of the times we're living in, the focus is really going to be on maximizing your personal freedom and maintaining your personal freedom. Because like I've been saying on so many of my videos lately, you can have all the wealth in the world, and if you don't have freedom, you got nothing. And we are seeing just daily our liberties and personal freedoms being under attack by big governments in New York, in San Francisco, in New Orleans. I just found out today that Dubai, the UAE, is now requiring government mandates. They're basically Jim Crow laws, where they're telling governments that, where they're telling businesses that it is illegal to serve a certain portion or a certain group in the population. It's very, very dangerous. I mean, you want to talk about a slippery slope. There is a huge slippery slope. And I think we're at a massive crossroads in society and in the world today. And we're either going to go toward totalitarianism, or we're going to get off the road to serfdom and go back to valuing freedom over perceived safety. And we're going to be talking a lot about this at Rebel Capitalist Live and going over strategies that you can employ in your own life. So after the live stream, definitely check that out at rebelcapitalistlive.com. So let's see what we've got for questions today, guys. First one, how much did you have in the bank when you retired? I don't want to give an exact amount, but we'll say seven figures. All right, Wayne Smith. George, you mentioned getting in your truck, hitching up an Airstream, and going to the mountains. My travels tell me the U.S. is still the most free. Questions. Yeah, I agree, Wayne. The big problem that the United States has is food, in the sense that we are heavily dependent upon an intricate number of supply chains in order to put food in the grocery store. So let's say that you go to Sandpoint, Idaho, as an example. Or let's say you go to Florida, because you see that and you say, well, they're the most free. The governor there, for the majority of the people, we'll assume, especially on the West Coast, they see the world the same way that I do. And I want to be around like-minded people to build that strong community. You're still dependent on the, let's say, fragile supply chains that we have in the United States in order to get the food that you would buy in the grocery store. So I've been talking a lot to Chris McIntosh about this, the hedge fund manager who's one of my partners in Rebel Capitalist Pro. And he's been studying this extensively. So it's I'm not saying that this is not a prediction by any means, but if you really want to have a solid plan B and you want to remain in the United States, this is something you need to think about. In addition to that, I believe that the probabilities, I don't want to say are high. Let me rephrase that. That the probabilities are high enough for us to think about, let's say, or to allocate mental bandwidth to, that we get some sort of event. And I don't know who would orchestrate this event. I don't want to go down that path.
I'm sure everyone on this live stream has their own opinion, but I think that we may get some sort of event in Florida specifically. And unfortunately, I think if the numbers from this Delta strain start to get better, because if you've studied this at all, you see that in India or the UK, with this Delta strain, it just goes straight up and kind of straight down. And which makes sense, because the R-naught value is supposed to be extremely high. And if the R-naught value is high, it's going to go through the population very, very quickly. And then those people are going to have natural immunity to it. And then kind of you're done for the time being. So assuming that what we see in Florida, or what we saw in India, happens in Florida, and then it moves on, I'm sure it'll move on probably up into the north and throughout the rest of the United States. But if the narrative goes back to Florida is doing just as well as everyone else, but they don't have the same restrictions, they don't have any of the vaccine mandates, they don't have the mask mandates, they're allowing kids to actually be kids and to go to school without having to cover their entire face or to inject a foreign substance into their body. You know, they hold these positions, and a lot of people have, you know, pointed at Florida as an example that's kind of counter to the mainstream narrative. And I don't think they like that. I don't think whoever they are, you know, whether that's the politicians, whether it's the media, whether it's the, who knows, the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, at this point, the World Economic Forum, the IMF, I mean, who knows, really? But I think that there's obviously a push towards these mandates that has something to do with something other than health. I think that's very, very safe to say. So whomever is doing that, and for whatever their reasons they have, I think that they're going to want to make an example out of Florida, or they're going to want to have more control over Florida. And you could see some sort of, I'll just say, an event in Florida that would bring about, let's say, more of a police state type of environment that you would see in New York or in France or maybe in Australia right now. And I'm not saying that it would be an event around the Cerveza sickness. I don't know. Could be something completely different. Could be, who knows? Could be a mass shooting. I don't know. But I've got, I guess, a hunch, for lack of a better word, that if Florida continues to do well, it's kind of an outlier after they get through this issue they're having with the Delta variant. If they continue to do well, bucking the trend of the mainstream narrative, there's going to be an incentive for those people who want to continue to push the mainstream narrative to, let's just say, make an example out of Florida, to where that's a less viable option for those people who value freedom. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think that whether you're, you know, wherever you stand on these issues, I think you're just lying to yourself if you believe that these government-issued mandates are in some way about health. And the smoking gun there that I would give you is, if they were about health, they would also acknowledge natural immunity that is a result of having the Cerveza sickness in the first place. Because every positive attribute CNN or Fauci or anyone can give to a vaccine, it would also be applicable to natural immunity. And the fact that they're completely omitting that entirely from the conversation tells you everything you need to know about the true motives as to what is going on. And one more thing I'll say on that before I continue with the questions is, I tweeted about this today, and I noticed that the majority of the tweets that were, let's say, had a different view. I was talking about government-issued vaccine mandates being about something other than health. Every single person, and I mentioned natural immunity, every single person almost that had a counter view to that and was in favor of mandates didn't even know what natural immunity was. I was, on one hand, I was shocked, but yet I wasn't, right? Every single person responded about how stupid I was, because to think that some people would just have magically an immune system that was better equipped to handle the cerveza sickness was just completely anti-science. And they're tweeting this, they're commenting this, not even knowing the definition or what natural immunity or what I'm referring to, not even having a clue. They think I'm referring to some sort of, some people just might have an evolutionary, be better disposed or predisposed to handling the cerveza sickness. Just again, right over their heads. They don't even realize that natural immunity is referring to people who have already had COVID and have these antibodies built up. So that's the type of person that you're dealing with when you're trying to present a counter argument for these or present an argument for why these government mandates are bad. That's the type of mentality or lack thereof you're dealing with. Just FYI. Will San Francisco property rise even as it becomes more tyrannical? I don't see how it will. I don't see how it will. I mean, you've got to think about what's going on here in New York and San Francisco. They are basically telling businesses that they're not allowed to serve 50% of the United States. I mean, let's think about the margins on a restaurant. I mean, what are they? Maybe 5%? Maybe 10% at the very most. And the majority of their costs are fixed from the standpoint of their lease and payroll. So, and what I mean by that, for those of you who haven't run a business, that means that even if you have one customer or you have 100 customers, the majority of your costs are still the same. So, you know, to say that it's illegal for you to serve half of the United States, especially in New York, where it's so tourist driven, that's going to be the final nail in the coffin for a lot of these small and mid-sized businesses. And, you know, maybe that's the point. Maybe that's, I'm not going to say what this is all about, but maybe that's what a lot of this is about. You know, you think about Bezos, and I don't really have an opinion on Bezos, but I mean, he buys the Washington Post, and there is no, well, I don't think there's a media outlet that says pro-lockdown than the Washington Post, or pro-government mandate than the Washington Post. And you got to kind of scratch your head and say, wonder who lockdowns benefit. Yeah, that would be Amazon quite a bit, don't they? And then you say, I wonder who these mandates benefit. And then you come to other conclusions that may point at a similar group of individuals. And but as far as the property, my point is it's going to be bad for business. And if it's bad for small and mid-sized businesses, then you're going to see people just get the hell out of Dodge. And let me give you another anecdotal story that I think will shed some light on, you know, where you want to invest and where you don't want to invest, where you want to hold real estate, where you don't want to hold real estate. I've got a mastermind group that I never even talk about, but it's with Jason Hartman and Kenny McElroy. And we are planning, we've got our November event planned here in Phoenix, but we are planning a November event in, or excuse me, February event in Florida. The reason we're planning it there is because we are really concerned that if we plan it anywhere else, it could be shut down due to restrictions. The city could come in and do a New York or a San Francisco, to where, you know, now all of a sudden we don't have an event, because the majority of the people that are coming to this mastermind most likely will not be vaccinated. And then how do you go to a restaurant? How do you go to a hotel? I mean, it just becomes logistically impossible. So we're like, you know, to hedge our bets, let's make sure that we're going to Florida. Well, what's happening is you can't, every single place is completely booked. And I'm talking about, you know, the higher end hotels. We're looking at the Breakers in West Palm as an example. And, but any of those, you know, nice hotel, just book. Almost every place is booked, packed, or booked solid throughout 2022. Because everyone's thinking the exact same way we're thinking. All these event organizers and event planners and businesses and even the corporations that are probably making these mandates for their employees, they're probably still doing it, you know, just in Florida, just for the exact same reasons. They're just not telling you and being forthright with you. So my point is, if you're going to own a property, do you want to own a property in somewhere like Florida, or do you want to own a property in somewhere like San Francisco or New York City? So obviously a rhetorical question, but I think the whomever is, or whatever groups or whatever is behind this push as far as overreach of government and trying to micromanage our lives, the push that we're seeing right now, whoever is behind this, they know that. They realize that all the businesses are going to Florida or Texas. They realize that all the conventions are going there. They realize that there's just a mass migration of people out of California, out of New York, and all these places where they're just, it's just basically a totalitarian police state. And the taxes are just going higher. I mean, why the hell would you stay there? But they realize this. And that's why my biggest concern for someone somewhere like Florida is that there's something there that something is planned, some sort of event is planned there that makes it less attractive. And obviously, I hope I'm wrong, but I have no proof of that. The probability is very low, but if it happens, it definitely wouldn't surprise me.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
George, you like stuff everyone is down on. Oh, I see. So I like things that are out of favor, yes. And everyone seems to be bad-mouthing the dollar. So where do you stand on the dollar? Do you think it has upside? Well, but I also like to buy things when they're cheap and sell them when they're expensive. And there's nothing cheap about the dollar. I mean, my opinion on the dollar, outside of from an investing standpoint, is it really, and again, I don't know what you're talking about when you say the dollar against what? The dollar against goods and services, the dollar against stocks, the dollar against Bitcoin, gold, the dollar against the euro on the DXY. You've got to be more specific there, but I'm assuming you're talking about the dollar on the DXY. And in order to answer that question or even have an educated opinion, I'd have to determine who's going to be in control of creating more dollars in the future. If it's the commercial banks, then yeah, I would be bullish on the dollar, on the DXY, against other currencies, sure, because they're not going to be able to produce enough dollars to satisfy the demand assuming velocity stays low, and the demand for dollars being the amount of dollar-denominated debt outside the United States. Goes back to Brent's theory, you know, Brent Johnson. Now, if there's dollars that are being created by the government with the Fed monetizing it, and we continue to see just M2 go parabolic, then, especially if we're running these massive trade deficits, then there's a lot of dollars that are getting outside the United States. Because when we run bigger and bigger trade deficits, that means we're importing more and more goods. If we're importing those goods, what are we exporting? We're exporting the dollars to pay for the goods, right? So the bigger the trade deficit, the more dollars that are leaving the United States and circulating within the global economy. Well, that means that there's more dollars out there to service the debt. And so if that's the case, then I could see the dollar staying the same. I mean, I could see it going anywhere, but I think the probability would be high that the dollar kind of goes around in this range, just based on, you know, how much deficit spending we're seeing out of the government, and how that's, and what we're seeing with the lockdowns, and, you know, the ability to produce goods and services, or goods more specifically, here in the United States. If we move into a scenario where the central bank becomes central to the dollar, meaning the Fed can actually create dollars that circulate in the real economy through a central bank digital currency, then I would be very bearish on the dollar, especially if we do it first and Europe and Japan and especially Europe, because the euro is 57% of the DXY, the basket of currencies that the dollar is measured against, especially if they haven't done that yet. If they haven't done that yet and we do, then I'd be bearish on the dollar. So you see, your question is very nuanced and very complex. You've got to kind of compartmentalize the dollar against what, or you've got to ask yourself who you think will be in control over the creation of dollars in 2 years, in 5 years, or whatever your time horizon is. So you spoke of a black swan event last week, being that if vaccines fail, number one, if they don't work as well as they were supposed to, we were sold on it. And it seems as though that's pretty much what's coming out in the media right now. And shocking, I can't believe they're really, I can't believe they're covering it. But yes, that's why we're coming out with these booster shots, because the vaccines so far have worked well and provided immunity, especially the Pfizer vaccine, for the first 6 months, but then it really drops down. And so that means that human beings are basically going to be turned into kind of like hardware, like your iPhone. I've got my phone right here. So you know how your iPhone, in fact, I've got the message coming up all the time right now, that it, you know, periodically, once every 3 months or so, it'll tell you that you need a software update. And you've got to plug your phone into your computer, download it, connect to the Wi-Fi, do whatever. And then it updates the software on the phone. I think there's a good chance that we see something like that with these vaccines, where you're basically, your body is turned into hardware like your iPhone, and you just need constant updates. Every 3 months, you've got to go back for another shot, another shot, another shot, another shot, another shot, another shot. I don't even want to get into why or what's the motivation behind that, but I think that could be a black swan in and of itself, because at that point, well, maybe not. I mean, I was going to say, Aaron, that at that point, I think it would be very hard to argue that these vaccines were a success, but people are out of their minds. I mean, we're dealing, the simple fact that we have to try to convince people, Americans that we grew up with, in the land of the free and the home of the brave, the simple fact that we have to try to convince people that there is value in freedom, that you should see personal and individual freedom as something to strive for, that we should prioritize freedom over perceived safety, and that if you don't, that puts you on a very, very slippery slope that you do not want to be on. The fact that we have to convince fellow Americans of this is something that I still can't really wrap my head around. In fact, every morning I wake up, it seems like some sort of weird, bad dream that, you know, here I find my, it's like Groundhog Day. Remember that movie with Bill Murray? It's like just some sort of bizarre twilight zone. You know, I on Twitter the other day, I said it seemed like, remember in Back to the Future? I forgot which one it was, but that's where Biff gets the almanac and they travel to that alternate universe or whatever, where Biff gave himself, his young self, the almanac, and how the world or that city turned out. And that it was just like a dystopian nightmare. That's what it seems like that's what I've woken up to in 2021 and in 2020, starting in March, is just this weird, like, alternate universe where Biff somehow got the almanac. And it just seems like some sort of twilight zone that at some point we've got to wake up, but we never do. So, I know that was a tangent, but my main point there was, I was going to say that you would think that would wake people up, but if people haven't woken up already to what's going on, they never will. They just flat out never will. You know, I was fortunate enough to go to a Bitcoin meetup here in Phoenix on, I think it was Tuesday night, maybe, or Thursday night, or Friday night, getting all my days mixed up here. I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday evening. And Max Kaiser put it on. I had never met Max, and you know, he's quite an entertainer, and he's got his shtick. But I met him back in the green room, and we hung out for a while and really talked a lot for probably about an hour. And he's really, really a good guy. And his wife, Stacy, is just incredibly sharp and unbelievably gracious. And just they're two very kind individuals, and just with a high degree of character. You can tell that just by, you know, just by meeting them, talking to them. But Gerald Celente was also there. And I spoke to Gerald. You know, we were really having kind of a heart-to-heart discussion about what's going on here. And he is very concerned. I mean, noticeably. You can see it in his face. And one of the things we were talking about is this concept of, you know, who do you try to reach? And I remember when I used to teach salespeople before I retired for one of the businesses that I had, I'd always tell them, I'd say, listen, you're not trying to sell everybody because that's impossible. What you have to do, the key to being a good salesperson, is being able to figure out who is receptive to being sold. And then make sure that you sell 100% of those people, or as high a percent as possible. What the amateur salesperson does is they don't evaluate the person that they're talking to initially, and they just try to sell everyone, and they end up wasting their time, and they make very few sales as a result of all the time wasted. And Gerald saw it the exact same way, because I was talking to him about how do we make a difference today? How do we make a difference in the world? How do we stand up and fight for freedom? How do we actually move the needle here, Gerald? You know, because I don't know how old he is, but he's got to be at least, you know, maybe 65 or something, maybe older. You know, he told me he's been doing this for 40 years. 40 years. I mean, he is a proper OG. So I always look to people like that for advice. You know, they've been doing this a lot longer than I have. And I say, Gerald, you know, how do we move the needle? And he talked about the same concept that I had with my salespeople. It's like, listen, you got to understand, there's a third of the population that is going to be very receptive right off the bat to what you're saying. There's going to be a third of the population that no matter how well you articulate your message, they're never going to open their eyes. They just want to be ruled. I don't know why. It's just human hardwiring. They're just going to believe every single thing that the government tells them, no matter how many times the government lies to them, no matter how obvious these lies are, they're going to continue to believe everything just so they don't have to think themselves. And I think it's also this issue of cognitive dissonance where it would just cause too much psychological anxiety. It would destroy their worldview if they were to admit that they can't trust the government. So that's the third of the people that you're just never going to reach. So the trick to actually making a difference today, fighting for freedom, not obviously I'm using that in a figuratively speaking, in a nonviolent way, just standing up for freedom, making a difference in the world, making sure that we're not going down the path to totalitarianism, is to focus on that third that's in the middle. Not the people who are automatically going to be receptive, not the people who are just completely brainwashed and gone forever, but the people that are in the middle that have kind of a, and I talked about this on a, I don't know if it was last week's live stream or if it was on a live stream on the Rebel Capitalist channel, but I talked about this. It's all of you remember when you first got interested in what's going on with the Fed or quantitative easing or the repo market or the government deficits, money printing, quote unquote, the euro dollar market. You saw, and maybe it was right after the GFC, and you saw all that, you know, the Fed's balance sheet go from 800 billion to 4 trillion. And at the time, you might not have understood economics at all, but just something didn't seem right. Like, how can the government spend that much money without any downside, without them distorting the economy, without creating some sort of problem long-term in the future? Something doesn't seem right. You just had a visceral reaction, or, you know, that feeling in your gut that you just, I don't know. So then that takes you down the path of actually studying to figure out what is going on. And then maybe you watched one of my videos, maybe you watched someone else's videos, maybe you watched Milton Friedman, maybe you watched, you know, Bob Murphy or Tom Woods or one of the Austrian economists, and you started to learn about sound money, learn about the Fed, and that takes you down the path and you start connecting the dots, and that brings you to the understanding that you have today, and it shapes your worldview. But see, you were objective enough. You had enough of an open mind to be receptive to the truth initially when you had that feeling in your gut that something ain't right. So my point is we've got to find those people, and that's who we need to deliver our message to, because I think at the end of the day, we've got truth on our side. We've got history on our side. You know, when you look at history, how many times were the good guys doing the censoring? Right? If you look at what the mainstream media is trying to do now, and if you look at what social media, the big tech companies are trying to do, right? And a lot of people are in favor of censoring, right? When were those people the good guys? I can tell you, never. They were never the good guys. When were the people and the corporations and the entities and the governments that favored a police state, that favored a totalitarian police state, when were those people on the right side of history? So I think that if you look at our message of just freedom and being able to choose, and not that, you know, you can have your opinion on vaccines, that you could think they're good, you could think they're bad. I'm not here to say that, you know. I've got my own opinions on, I think everyone should do a proper risk reward, because for everyone, the risks and the rewards are different. I don't think it's just a blanket, you know, you cast a net over all the population. It's just some binary conclusion. I think that's absolute nonsense. But my point is, that's not my message. My message is you should be free to choose. And there is downside to freedom. I get it. Just like there's downside to free market capitalism. I get it. But the bottom line is we are imperfect human beings living in an imperfect world. There is no perfect system. What we have to do is we have to fight, figuratively speaking, for the least bad system we as human beings are capable of creating, or the least imperfect system. And that's where the emphasis is on the individual. In a system of free market capitalism with rule of law and sound money. That's where the magic happens. So again, we are in that camp. So throughout history, we have been on the right side of history. Throughout history, when you look at the individuals who stood up for freedom and free speech, they were the good guys. And I think if you fast forward 20 or 30 years from now, they're going to be the good guys again. But we have to be strategic about our message. And we can't just use this shotgun approach and assume that it'll work. We have to focus in on the third of the population that is receptive to the message of freedom, because they look around the world around them, and regardless of their political leanings, they realize that something is wrong.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Why are there so many cowards in the chat talking about leaving their country? I don't think that's cowardly at all. I think there's many reasons to stay here. The number one reason, well, actually number one through 10, would be family. That's number one. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately is, if they institute some sort of law which would restrict or prevent Americans from coming back into the country if they had not been vaccinated. And so think about that for a moment, right? So if you leave the country, you cannot come back in unless you're vaccinated. And a lot of people would say, well, I don't want any part of that. Well, okay. But that means that you're never going to see your family again for the rest of your life. That's a big decision. Like, as an example, my mom is, well, she didn't want me to tell her age, tell you her age, rather. But, I enjoy hanging out with my mom occasionally. I've got a wonderful family, and it would be just a nightmare, quite frankly, to wake up every day and know that I'm never going to see them again. And know that the only way to see them is to cave to the government that is forcing me to do something I don't want to do. And at that point, I need to be clear, it's not even about a vaccine, nothing to do about a vaccine. At that point, it's a matter of principle. It's just a matter of principle for me. So then your option is to never leave the United States. Okay, well, how is that different than a Berlin Wall? Basically the same thing, right? And then what if they do it within states? You can't cross a border from one state to the next unless you have your passport, your vaccine passport, right? And what do you do? You just going to live the rest of your life wherever you are right now? That's pretty sobering. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. And I just can't even comprehend that we're having to convince Americans that this is not a good idea. That giving the government this type of powers is not good. That takes us into the no bueno zone, if you will. But as far as, cowards, I don't know. Were the people that left Venezuela before hyperinflation, were they cowards? Were the people that left Nazi Germany, were they cowards? Were the people that left Zimbabwe, were they cowards? Were the people that left Russia, prior to Stalin, were they cowards? Look at these people that are trying to, I was watching a clip from Joe Rogan, and I didn't even watch the whole clip because I don't like watching things like this that are, I don't like watching disturbing things. It doesn't, there's no value for me whatsoever. But they're showing a clip that, and I turned it off before they showed the clip, but they were going to show a clip of these people in Afghanistan that were literally, you're trying to get on this plane and the plane's taking off and they're just falling to their death, trying just desperately to get out of Afghanistan. I don't know. Are those people cowards? I mean, if you've got a 5 or 6 year old child right now and you live in a state where potentially they're going to force that child to wear a mask for the rest of their life whenever they're in school, and think about the psychological impact that has on a child when they're developing, or they're going to force your child to get some sort of vaccine and be turned into this basically this iPhone. Let's say you got a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, and you say, you know what, I want no part of that, and you leave the country. Are you a coward? And by the way, what is it that you are going to do that is uncowardly? What is it that you are going to do that is so brave? You know, a lot of, and I don't want to, pick on this individual, but a lot of people always told me that, when I would do live streams or whatnot in like 2019, they would always say that, that's never going to happen in the United States because, there's 350 million guns here. And, especially the diehard gold bugs, they would always say, the government's never going to take my gold. They'll get my lead before they get my gold. Right? That's the saying that you always heard. Really? Really? Well, I would like to ask anyone that has this opinion, what did you do that was so brave in 2020? When the government locked you in a cage, when the government forced you to close down your business, when the government would not allow you to go to the beach, what did you do that was so brave? What did you do to stand up for your own freedom? And if you didn't do anything to stand up for your freedom in 2020, what makes you think that you'll do anything to stand up for your freedom in the future? So I would hesitate to cast some sort of opinion on others without walking in their shoes first, right? What is the saying? They who live in glass houses should not throw stones. Everyone is different. Everyone has a different set of circumstances that they're dealing with. So to say that some individual is a coward without knowing their personal situation, I don't think we can say that definitively. Now, one thing I will say, though, to stand up for that individual, maybe that idea is I want to, and I think this would, before I find another question here, it would be valuable for me to expand on this. Another part of my conversation with Gerald Celente, and again, this is, where we were just sitting there face to face. It was really a neat opportunity. And I having a beer. Yeah, we were at this bar, so he and I took a walk outside just so we could get out of the noise and kind of be left alone. And he and I were out there walking around for probably a good 45 minutes just having a beer and just, talking about the same stuff we're talking about right here. And we were talking about the Berlin Wall. And so I want to offer this as kind of a counterpoint to what I just said, or maybe some more food for thought from a different perspective. He asked me, he said, George, do you know how they brought down the Berlin Wall? And I said, "Not. I don't know the exact story, Gerald." And he said, let me tell you, what they did is there was a group of people that just went out to the wall and they wouldn't leave. And they say, you know what? Shoot me. Shoot me. I don't care. I'm not leaving. And then a lot of people who were in their houses saw them do this. And more people went to the wall and said the same thing. And then more people went. And more people went. And more people went. To the point where there were thousands of citizens there standing up for freedom for every one soldier that had a gun. And obviously the soldiers look around and say, if I shoot someone, I'm probably not getting out of here alive. So what'd they do? The soldiers set down their guns, they walked away. And the citizens tore down the wall. You see, what we have to realize, we look around what's going on in Australia right now as an example. And it is true that the government has a lot of power. But at the end of the day, we have more numbers. And I don't want this to be construed to seem as though I'm advocating for violence, because I am not. I do not believe in violence. This is just, I'm saying that there's a non-violent way to do this. It's call it civil disobedience, whatever you want to call it. But we've got the numbers on our side, and if everyone would stand up, just like they did in Berlin, and say, no, I'm not doing it. That's how we win, right? Think about that. If every single person in New York, every single business owner, every single customer just said, no, I don't care about your stupid mandate. I'm not obeying the rules. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to buy a coffee, whether you like it or not. And that store owner says, you know what? I don't care about your rules. I am going to sell that person a coffee. What are they going to do? There's too many people. You can't take them all to jail. I think that's the only way, or that's one of the ways we win this fight for freedom, is just standing up as a group, as a community, as a society that values freedom, and just saying, no, I'm not playing by your rules anymore. I'm standing up for freedom. We're going to break down this wall. I need to figure out a game plan to how we can organize this and how we can pull this off in a way that is effective. Because it's not something, although the way they did it with the Berlin Wall was just, I think people just got sick and tired of it and they got pushed too far. And I don't know that it was an organized event. I think it maybe was something that just was more organic, that just, it was just a consistency, or it was just something that there was like a common denominator with everyone in the general public that they had all had too much. And no one had to say, hey, listen, we need to go stand out at that wall. People were just at their boiling point and they did it anyway. I hope we can figuratively break down our Berlin Wall before that happens. I hopefully we can take a more surgical approach to it. And honestly, that's what I'm trying to figure out, not just on this live stream right now, but in my personal life. Just nonstop. It's the only thing I think about. It's you know, I had dinner the other night with Mark Moss prior to going to the Bitcoin deal, and he said, you know, George, he asked me if I was on medication because he said, man, you're just so mellow, and your voice is low. Or the volume of your voice is what he meant. He says, you just don't seem like yourself. You're just kind of, you know, out of it. And I said, yeah, I mean, it's true. It's just because, Mark, I'm not even listening to what anyone's saying. I'm not even hearing anything. I'm not even cognizant of the food I'm eating or the taste of the food, because every single thought is of mine is specifically devoted to how do we solve this problem? How do we fight for freedom and how do we win? And, you know, a lot of people have even commented on my videos, on the live streams. I had one person comment, say, George, I've been watching you since, I think this person said January or February of 2020. And, you know, prior to the cerveza sickness. And they said, you are a completely different person now. Your attitude is completely different. Your facial expressions are different. You don't laugh as much. The mood is far more sobering. You have a much more serious approach to this. And they're right. They're absolutely right. I don't like that. I don't like being this way. But I just realized the stakes are high and we're at that crossroads. And, you know, there's a time to laugh. There's a time to play. There's a time to really be jovial and lighthearted. And I don't think now is that time. For me personally, now is a time to focus. Now's the time to put your game face on. Now is the time to get serious about winning a war and standing up and fighting for freedom, not just for me, not just for my friends, not just for their children, but for our grandchildren and for future generations. That's how important I think the time in which we live actually is. These are the things that I'm thinking about, and I think if you guys are cognizant of this and you're aware of and just helping out by talking to your friends and family member Freds that you think are in the third of the population who would actually be receptive, that might lean left or they might lean right, who knows, but they just look around and they know that something's not right. If you can do your part and reach out to those individuals, if we all do that, we're going to move the needle and we're going to win. And we're going to get off this road to serfdom and we're going to get back to prioritizing freedom and the rights of the individual as a society. So, all right, guys, thanks for watching and I'll see you on the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.